This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter, at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Welcome, congregation. Good to see you all. If you don't know what that's about, last night we decided that we were going to, as a way of exposing just how easy it is to create a church, we are in the process right now of creating the Church of Non Sequitur, CONS, and that makes you our congregation. So welcome. It's good to have you here in church tonight. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
I think that
we got to work on that.
Yeah, we need to.
Oh yeah, we gotta get a little southern in here. We gotta get a little hallelujah or a reverend or something.
What about a woman instead of a man? Let's go the other route.
Like a political woman. Stuff. A woman. A gender non-binary.
Yeah, who are we to tell what this word is? Who are we to tell it if it's a man or a woman? It's 2018.
A them.
You them. Yes, there we go. A them. A them.
A them.
Good job. Well, you know, you were talking just a second ago, Jim. By the way, everyone, let me just briefly mention who our guest is tonight. This is the CEO of the Atheist Republic. I'm sure all of you, I know I follow them religiously on Twitter. It's really strange because I have a really good friend that in high school that I was catching up with the other day. And the point that we were talking about was that he retweets you guys all the time. So I was like, oh, you know, you follow the Atheist Republic. And they're like, oh, I love it. Their stuff is, what's the word he used? Phenomenal, I believe, is the word that he used. But he gave you really high praise.
Yeah.
So welcome, Jim Majors.
It's very humbling. We definitely appreciate we world's largest online community, just under 2 million followers on Facebook. Com. And if you don't know, we do our best to unify atheists around the world, and we promote a common cause. We are a non-profit.
Jim, you're breaking up on us again.
We're catching most of that, but it's still breaking apart. I think there's a demon being attached to you. Have you been messing around with somebody? Yoga. Did you sleep with somebody 10 years ago? Did you have a demonic transfer?
It could be that there's. Do you have any programs running in the back? Sometimes
that's
does.
What I'm checking right now.
Oh, sure. Go with the program thing. I'm telling you, it's demons.
Look, we have to be careful here. Steve, don't be a jackass.
It's the demons.
You know why I say that? Jim was telling us just a second ago that he was sent a link to someone about the show tonight, and they asked, "Oh, is that Steve the jackass?" You're making quite a name for yourself, Steve, around the
I've got a collection of terminology people use. That's mild, actually. You gotta be a little more original with that one.
Welcome, Steve, the jackass. So maybe say something now, Jim, and let's see if that fixed you.
Okay, hopefully this is a little bit better.
Nope.
No.
We got that first section of words, and it just completely cut off. The last resort in cases like this are that you have to flip your camera off to save on your bandwidth, unless you want to try to refresh and then come back in. I'm going to assume he's refreshing.
Yes, well, I was refreshing.
That sounds a little bit better.
Okay, hopefully this. I apologize.
Well, that's okay. Look, we have. It's usually me. It's usually me the one that's this clipping. But I think we settled that whenever I had to. I found out that my internet service provider was like giving me half of what I paid for, so I had to completely switch internet providers, and that fixed it. But let me knock out two announcements real quick, and then we'll jump into the discussion that we're gonna have tonight. If you stick around after this show tonight, I am going to be I'm in the process right now of uploading a debate. People want to know, they ask me what happened after the Kyle Goes Nuclear on G-Man episode, and I'm going to upload the debate that I had with G-Man on the Geek Room on the subject of morality. We had, me and him went toe to toe on morality, and I have that loaded up, and it will premiere following this show tonight. So you can stick around after that, and you can watch that if you'd like to. Also tomorrow. Now, Steve, we've had some pretty epic dumpster fires on this program, haven't we?
Yeah, to say the least.
Okay. Well, I need you to bring tomorrow your industrial strength gloves, because tomorrow's dumpster fire is going to be off the fucking chain. We have two people, two very prominent gamers. I'm sure everybody knows Destiny. He is a prolific gamer around YouTube, huge following. And then we've had Ian on the show. Ian, is it White Chong? Is that his name? Ian Chong White?
Yeah. Steve? Well, Ian something Chong. I don't know what his middle name.
Yeah, Miles. Something Chong. Ian Miles. So,
Ian Miles.
Yes,
Chong.
Yes. Ian Miles Chong. We've had him on, and he came with Rags one time to talk about freedom of speech. Well, these two, I had Destiny coming originally to do a debate on circumcision, and the person that we were having him debate had some things come up and couldn't wind up coming on to the show. So we had to switch some things at the last minute. So I asked Destiny if he knew Ian, and he knew Ian quite well and pointed me to this video. Now we're going to show you a little clip so you get a preview of just what's going to go down tomorrow on the show. So Dave, could you roll a couple of seconds of that clip?
Oh, I want to watch the video together. Do you want to watch the video together?
He has said, look at what he has said. He has explained.
Do you want to watch the video together, Ian? Ian, do you want to watch the video together?
Lord. Baby Bonnell.
Ian, do you want to watch the video, or are you too scared to watch it?
You are such a
child. Baby Bonnell needs his adult supervision to watch a video.
You don't want to watch it, Ian? Okay. That's okay, buddy. All right. Any other final memes you guys got?
It's such a deflection. Besides, you know, like
it's a deflection to watch the source. Ian, as a journalist, that's the story of your life. It's such a deflection to look past the headline. It's such a deflection to actually engage with the material. It's such a deflection to actually do any homework. That's why you tweet the dumbest fucking shit, Ian, like all the fucking time, because you can't read past headlines. Remember when you thought you'd found who was like the bomber or the terrorist that you thought you'd found that you tweeted out and you had to delete it because you were totally pulling everything out of your ass?
I actually owned up to it.
Oh my god.
Guess what?
Okay.
Dave, when pretty I'm funny. Wrong.
Okay, so that's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. So join us for that. That's going to be tomorrow at 8 p.m. Destiny and Ian Miles Chong, and we're going to start on the topic of freedom of speech and do you have the right to offend? And we'll see where it goes from there. There's no telling. What do you think, Jim?
I believe, you have the right to offend, because you cannot offend somebody. You can only be offended. And that being said, should you be able to up and it's violence or incites violence in any way?
We gotta we're gonna have to do something.
Okay,
Dave, do you have any ideas?
Let me got something running in the background, or he's got a high CPU load, maybe.
That must be it.
It's clipping bad. What we can do, what we can try to do is we can, Dave, do you think we can pipe him in through Skype if that would work? Okay, Jim, in the chat that's here on your screen, I'm gonna give you, Dave's Skype name. Can you add him, and then he's gonna bring you in through your video onto Skype, and we'll see if we can't. Maybe it's something with the browser and the load on that, and maybe that will fix it.
All right, I apologize.
So, no, that's fine, man. Just close out of here and add him on Skype, and me and Steve can we can talk about Steve's latest dumpster fires on Twitter until you get back. We've got plenty of materials there.
They're not even dumpster fires. They're straight up landfills.
All right, Jim. We'll see you in just a second, Jim.
All right.
Okay, so Steve, my phone's been going off for the past 3 days with notifications every other minute, and it's you arguing with somebody about these definitions. We've unleashed that monster again, Steve. Can you kind of tell me why you're battling literally everyone on the planet about the definition? And at some point, is it them or is it you?
It's them, and it's not about definitions. It is about logic. It is about reason. It is about being factually accurate. I present things called peer review papers. I present sources that are peer reviewed by experts that are in the literature. I expect people to give me the same when I ask them for evidence. They don't do that, and I don't understand why. This isn't about definitions. It is about a fundamental misunderstanding people have. I explain to them how it is. I give them citations. I give them peer review. I give them actual logical proofs. But none of that is good enough. And when I asked them for any of that, I haven't got a single paper. Now, I haven't got a paper sent to me in probably months.
You haven't got a single. Yesterday you
did. That wasn't an out of peer review paper.
I reviewed it.
Well, that doesn't count. And I found the errors in that paper. And it wasn't a paper. It wasn't peer review. Somebody wrote something. And by the way, that person that wrote that, at least he tried. He's wrong. And I'll be happy to explain why he's wrong. But at least he tried. But why is it, I don't understand this notion that when people have a platform and they ask other people, show me the evidence. If you don't know it, you can't show it, you don't know it. But when you ask them for evidence.
Listen to you taking Aaron Ross.
Right. Who do you think I'm referring to? When you ask people for evidence and they don't give you a peer review paper and they give you a colloquial dictionary, what does that tell you about their argument? The strength of their argument.
It tells me.
When I give them logical proofs and they can't refute the logic and they just say it's wrong, then where do you go from there?
Well, you ask the question of if somebody gives you the dictionary, what are you supposed to do with that argument? That means that they're giving you. Okay, this is my response to this. Okay, I know they're going with a colloquial definition of what atheism is, but that means colloquial is the term that the general, like everyone as a whole uses. Right. So do you want to get, when you're having an argument,
what do you mean everybody as a whole? I know a lot of,
colloquial mean?
I know a lot of atheists that don't use those definitions. Colloquial means general, very broad.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Right. And I know people that don't use, theory means guess in colloquialism, right? Is theory a guess?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay, what the dictionary says is a guess. You can't pick and choose, right? I use what's called sensu stricto definitions across the board. Okay, I'm consistent. Yeah, and if people don't want to, they don't have to. But here's, I'm going to tell my argument.
Hold on. Let me finish my point. Yours is general, for the most part, based in a philosophical usage, right? It's
is it wrong?
Philosophy heavy. That's not what's up for the question. My thing is, do you think do the masses use the philosophy definition of things, or is that a specialty, a niche?
If I say in science, biology, evolution is, and I use the definition, a change of allelic frequency in a given population of species from one population to the next, or sorry, from one generation to the next, and somebody says, well, a dictionary says it's just change. I'm using formal definitions. People would never argue about that. Mm-hmm. I have the same thing I'm doing in philosophy. Now, other people don't have to, but here's my argument. Okay, first of all, am I wrong for using formal definitions? Is that right or wrong?
I don't think it's a right or wrong question.
Okay, so I'm not wrong. Okay, so I'm not wrong on that.
But I don't think they are.
Here's my argument. I'm not calling them wrong for using definitions that I don't like. That's not why they're wrong. My argument is very simple. Don't label people using your own personal definitions. That's it.
Is that
you
want
to label yourself something? No. Have you ever said or ever heard me say, has anybody ever heard me say, anybody, you are not an atheist. You are this, period. No. I tell them in philosophy, this is what you want to be if you ask me, but I've never said you're not a true agnostic ever or true atheist ever. Have I?
No. But people are telling me that I'm an atheist. Is wrong or a bad
No, there's
argument?
No right or wrong to the definitions. There's no right or wrong. The definitions have usages, okay? It's not a matter of right or wrong. I am using different definitions, right? I'm using the formal mm-hmm. definitions, right? And in that mm-hmm. case, there's nothing wrong by doing that. But what's wrong is when somebody says, I'm going to use the word theory to mean guess, and I'm going to say that the evolutionary theory is a guess. Because I don't do that, right? You can't use your crappy definitions for how I use them. So I don't tell them they're not atheists when they have an agnostic. They are crappy. I've argued that. I think they're very crappy. But that's my personal opinion.
But what's the difference then what they're doing? Maybe
it's a crappy opinion, right?
Right. But when they tell you that yours is a crappy definition, what's the difference?
That's fine. Absolutely. But the difference is I don't go around telling them they're not atheist. I've never once in 5-6 years ever done that. Have I?
I don't think anybody's accusing you of that. Here's my ultimate question, though, Steve.
I just got accused of it 5 minutes ago. So yes,
here's my ultimate question, though. Here's my ultimate question. Mm-hmm. Why does it matter? Why does it matter?
I don't like being labeled something I'm not. It's not my position. Would you be happy if people would go around telling people that you're a theist? All your friends that you're a theist? Your parents that you're a theist?
Yes.
Your kids, I wouldn't care. They're a theist? You wouldn't, but other people probably would. Well, I would. I'd be very bothered if people were going down telling them I'm a Scientologist. Well, I'm going to go around telling
Mommy
people
and Daddy
that
are fighting Jim, but welcome back.
I don't know what I have stepped into, but you guys really started another one.
you sound wonderful. Yeah,
we had to make airtime, man. Come on.
right.
Yeah. But the Dave, I believe ultimately though, Steve, it all boils down to this. Dave, can you let us hear what Seth Andrews thinks? Because he's the final judge on all this stuff anyways.
At least he has the sexiest voice. I mean, anyways.
We'll get that later, okay? Because it's not quite ready. I'm
busy. Dave, you're God.
Get our friend here.
What do you think? You think that I am out of line for people asking politely for people to label me my actual position rather than something that they think they should? I asked Dave.
Oh, well. Sorry, God, Dave. Robert. Sorry, Dave.
Now you're putting
Jim
me
is back.
Spot.
Let's move on. Jim is back.
I was about to say, who the hell is Dave?
Dave is the producer.
He's the producer.
Right. I can't. He's on the other side.
He doesn't really exist. He's a bot that we kind of programmed to run things around here. It's very, very effective. Right.
Okay.
Do it.
Play the clip. Oh, we're working on it, Shane. All right, so we can hear you a lot better now. Jim, you sound fantastic. Why don't you take a second to introduce yourself and let people know who you are and what you do and why you do it, all that good stuff, and then where they can find more, and then we'll let you take things away.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Jim Majors, and I'm the CEO of Atheist Republic. Atheist Republic is the world's largest online atheist community. We're growing every day. We've got just under 2.3 2 million followers on Facebook. And we also have a website, atheistrepublic.com, and we advocate for and on the behalf of atheists from around the world. We have literally people in every country. We have our Atheist Republic consulates where we encourage people to meet up, and we facilitate meetings for atheists to meet other atheists. And it's a really good way to meet people. So if you're interested in that, check us out online.
Excellent. So that's what are we going to be? Clear, by the way. Yeah, it sounds amazing.
What was
that?
Sound
amazing.
Oh.
You sound amazing now.
Oh, good, good. I think that's good to hear.
Yeah. So what are we talking about today, Jim?
Well, today I figured we would talk about some doctrinal contradictions within the Bible, within the Christian Bible, and go over my it's a little bit from my book where I go through the entire Bible and I actually break down what real contradictions are in the Bible and what contradictions aren't in the Bible, what are purported to be contradictions and what I believe anyways actually are, not just that, but moral contradictions. But today we're just figured I'd go over some of the synoptic gospels and John. The synoptic gospels are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it's from my book, Holy Proofreading, Correcting Christianity, and it's coming out next year.
Now, earlier today, I think you made a really good point with the gentleman that goes by the name of Artisan Tony, who challenged Steve and I to have a debate with him on if the Bible – whether the Bible teaches a flat earth or not, which we accepted, and it will be happening in January. I talked to him actually the other day on the phone for like an hour, really nice guy. And we went through what day he's going to come on and all that stuff. But he has a little bit of an issue with the way that what he thinks that we bash Christians here all the time, which is untrue. We do not spend a lot of time bashing truth. We highlight the what we think are the errors and some of the bad things that comes with the religion. But you, I think, summed it up nicely when you responded to him this afternoon. Do you want to say what you told him earlier today?
I honestly don't recall verbatim what I said, but it was something along the lines of that I'm not bashing Christians. I'm simply exposing a harmful doctrine and harmful belief. It's belief, not the believer. Kind of like the Christians say, hate the sin and not the sinner. It's right. Except mine's not a cop out.
Ooh, shots fired! Shots fired!
Pow.
I thought it was a great point. Where you're bashing the. The idea is not the person that is indoctrinated with those ideas. And I think that's a nice distinction to make. So let's jump right into it. Let's get into some contradictions. I can't believe, number one, that there are actually contradictions in the Bible. This is shocking news to me, and I just don't know what to do with myself right now.
Right. There actually are contradictions in the Bible. Believe it or not, a lot of people think that the Gospels were written to bring people to Christianity, to bring people to the religion. But what was originally called the Gospel was actually the Old Testament, the Old Law, the first five books, the Torah. These Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and even John, they weren't written to convert people to Christianity. Rather, they were written to give the current followers of Christ a stronger foundation in their faith, because we're talking like this, like the second century, 100 plus years after Jesus's death, and everybody's I'm sorry, and early Jews, you know, they believed that Jesus was coming back, like, within their lifetime. They believed he was coming back like fucking quick. Like, he was like, hey guys, I'm leaving, straighten your shit up, I'll be right back, and if this isn't picked up when I get back, I'm busting all your asses. Like, that's pretty much what was going on. So they were just kind of sitting there on pins and needles waiting for God to come back. And so by 200 AD, you know, this by the late second century, anyways, getting close to 200 AD, people are starting to kind of freak out about the idea of, hey, Jesus isn't coming back. My grandpa told me about him, and he's dead. And my dad's dead. He thought he was coming back in his lifetime, and I'm about to die, and they're not coming back in my lifetime. Like, is this really real? And so we don't really know the source of the Gospels, like where they came from, but we do know that Mark was the earliest one written. Early church tradition said that Matthew was written before Mark, that the order that they're laid out in the Bible in the New Testament is the order that they were written in. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I don't know. What do you guys? Steve asked me to make a clarification on something in the Bible, and it's because of the way different religions preach the inerrancy of the Bible, or the we'll just say infallibility and inerrancy. So there's a difference. So some religions teach that the infallibility of the Bible, saying that the details that aren't really pertaining to fundamental Christian beliefs and fundamental Christian standards of belief, that it doesn't really matter, you know, like so rounding mm-hmm. numbers up, for example, which some people believe is a contradiction whenever they are talking about the numbering the armies, the Israel armies in Exodus, and they say that there's a contradiction in that in the final total that they get from when another account in the Bible actually adds it up and puts them together and gives a final number, and it's because one rounds and one doesn't, and they're saying that that doesn't really matter, and to me it doesn't really matter. It's not a contradiction to me either, because if you if you look at the Bible, especially the New Testament, it was written over hundreds of years. Like while the Gospels were written at the earliest, very earliest, 40 years after Jesus supposedly died, which was Mark, there's still 100 or so years span in between that and the time that the last one was written. So You have to take into context the way people were writing then, the way people were contextual evidence, historical evidence, colloquial exception of stories. You know, maybe it was okay back then to round numbers, whatever. So I don't really consider that to be a contradiction. And then some churches, they teach on the inerrancy of the Bible, and inerrancy just means that there are no errors, but infallibility means that there cannot be any errors. So the infallibility says that if there's one error, then the entire premise of the Bible is flawed. Like you got to throw out the whole thing, because but not very many Christian religions or Christian sects accept that today, but that there are some who do, just because it's not convenient.
Do you think, just real quickly, just because I'm curious, do you think that Jesus existed as a historical figure, or are you in the camp that he did not?
I'm in the camp that he did not exist as a biblical Jesus as portrayed in the Bible. I do not believe that he was some supernatural, miracle working son of God, divine in any way, if he existed. But as far as the historicity of just a man named Yeshua ben Jacob that, you know, walked around southern Judea trying to get people to chill out, I mean, It's possible, but to me, the historicity of that Jesus doesn't matter because that's not the claim.
Yeah, I tend to fall in that. I think.
Yeah,
that camp.
I go with that too.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to say. I think.
Wow, yeah. This is easier than I thought. Shit.
Yeah,
I'm still scared. The last couple days too. He's like, dude, what am I walking into? You guys are going to eviscerate me. I'm like, no.
What are you walking into? Like I said at the beginning, I think we're for the most part all in agreement here. I think Jim's wanting to come in here and battle like a gladiator, right, Jim?
No.
Is that what you need?
No. Not at all. Not at all.
I'm kidding.
No.
Sparta.
So what are the
a little bit? What's, but next time?
We can definitely bring you. We can definitely bring you on for that. We got a dumpster with your name on it, man. Anytime.
Oh, great. Light her up.
There we go. That's what I like to hear. So what are take us through a couple of the your favorite contradictions that exist throughout the Bible. Like what are some that I like the idea of going through ones that are actually contradictions and then hit the ones that aren't contradictions, but many people think that they are.
Okay, sure. Okay, so I want to start off. Let me start off with the Gospel of Mark and kind of give just like a little brief history of that. So most modern day scholars, especially secular scholars, there is a consensus among biblical scholars who are actually theologians who are practicing Christians. That attributed to a little bit earlier, but most secular experts, I'm sorry, not experts. Anyway, they place Mark to be written at about 70 AD. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, were you thinking of scholars?
Scholars. There you go. That's the word. That's a ticket. Sorry. I put too much tequila in my fruit punch.
Heck yeah. This is going to be fun then.
Okay, so it, okay. So Mark was written at about 70 AD, according to most biblical scholars, especially secular biblical scholars, and that's around the same time of what's known as the Great Revolt, and it was one of three rebellions from when the Jews rose up against the Romans, it's traditionally from the church attributed to John Mark, who was Peter's interpreter, and Peter was one of the 12 apostles of Jesus. But knowing when it was written and how it was written, it's likely the source of Matthew and Luke. In Matthew and Luke, there's a lot of parallels, and in Mark and Matthew, there's even more so parallels. So Mark and Matthew are pretty much verbatim all the way through. Luke's a little bit different, and John, the author of John, I don't know. He was writing a comic book or something. I don't know, but we'll go over that in a minute. So in Mark and Matthew, there's a lot of parallels in Jesus's life, but especially in Jesus's death. But there's a little bit of a difference in genealogy. Now the genealogy is found in Matthew. Okay, so we'll go over that one first. And the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew, it traces his family tree all the way back to and past King Solomon, the son of David, and they wrote this into Matthew. It wasn't originally in Mark. As a matter of fact, in Mark there is no genealogy. It's only in two of the synoptic gospels, and it's not in John either. And these two genealogies are very different. The one in Matthew traces Jesus all the way back to King Solomon, the son of David, because of God's Old Testament promise to Solomon that his throne would rule over Israel forever if he obeyed God's commandments, which was, you know, Moses' law, the old law or whatever you want to call it. And his kingdom was split up. So that kind of negates that. And in Matthew, Matthew also tries to fulfill the prophecy, in Isaiah 7:14, saying that he would be born to a virgin, but instead of using the word Rethula for virgin, he fucked up and he used the word Alma, which means a young woman or maiden, basically like a young unmarried woman. Doesn't necessarily mean virgin. It doesn't imply whether she's had sex or not.
Alma, like A-L-M-A?
A-L-M-A-H phonetic spelling.
The reason I ask is in the Book of Mormon, there's a name Alma, and there's a place called Alma. And
I've
never heard that before. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, and so that screwed up the prophecy too, or at least the fulfillment of the prophecy, because they said, unto you a child is born. It'll be born into a young woman, into a maiden, not a virgin. So that screwed it up. And also in Matthew, after Jesus was born, I'm sure you've heard the story of King Herod, who heard about the king of the Jews being born, and he was all pissed off and shit. And he was like, man, we got to do something about this. Like, I need to whack this guy. I'm sure you guys know that story. So that story only exists in Matthew. Only in Matthew. It doesn't exist in Mark at all. As a matter of fact, most of Jesus's early life doesn't exist in Mark. So after Jesus was born, according to Mark, Herod sent some wise men to see if this king of the Jews was truly born in Bethlehem. And the wise men were given a vision of Herod's plan. Once they arrived there, you know, they brought the frankincense and the gold and the myrrh and everything and set it before Jesus. And they were just so overcome with his majesty and his just be in his presence that they were just so happy, because at the time they didn't know that Herod was planning on killing him. Herod was just like, hey, you know, I heard that this king of the Jews has been born over there in Bethlehem, and they were in Jerusalem. And he said, why don't you guys go over there and check it out? And if it's true, you guys come back and tell me, because I want to worship him too. And they're like, oh yeah, okay. And so after they got finished praising and everything, Jesus, they laid down. And they were shown a vision from God of Herod's true plans to kill the little baby Jesus, because he didn't want him threatening his throne, even though he was getting on up in age and the average life expectancy was like 35 years old at the time. He apparently was threatened by this baby. And so they split. They didn't tell Mary and Joseph or anything. They just left and they went back to their own country, but they went the back way so they wouldn't get caught going through through Herod's kingdom. And so after they're gone, an angel visits Joseph and Mary, whether in a dream or a vision or something, and tells them that they're in danger and said, hey, you know, this guy's trying to come and kill you and try to kill little baby Jesus. And so they pack up the barn, they load their ass, and they escape to Egypt, according to Matthew. And they stayed there until Herod died. They stayed there the whole time in Egypt. And this fulfilled the prophecy that said, out of Egypt did I call my son. But in Luke, in the other synoptic gospel that actually lays out Jesus's early life and his birth and everything, they're not warned of any danger. The wise men don't exist. Their wise men aren't even mentioned. The shepherds are mentioned. The baby in the manger is mentioned. Everything else that is in Matthew is in Luke, except the wise men. And apparently there's no mention of Herod. So I guess Herod's cool about everything. And so Jesus is born. They wait 8 days. They circumcise him. They perform the Judaic purification rites at the time, like kind of like a, I believe it's some kind of like a confirmation to God, and I believe that takes place at about a month when they're about a month old, a little after, and so after over a month of staying in Bethlehem, they go back to Jerusalem, to where Herod supposedly is. So they're bringing a one-month-old baby back to a place where Herod had commanded to kill every baby that is under the age of two.
Hmm. So how do Christians square those two? things there, well, when one is blatantly different than the other. What's the reasoning that is given for that?
There's not a whole lot of reason for this one that they give. Some of them say that they say, they say that they waited 8 days to circumcise Jesus and to perform purification rites and then go back to Jerusalem. But they didn't say how long after they performed the purification rites they went back to Jerusalem.
Interesting. See, I didn't know.
Saying, oh, well, they weren't specific. They didn't give us all of the information, so we can't, you know, we can't infer that. But they have right. No problem inferring that that Mary was a virgin, even though they had no evidence of that.
That's true. I didn't know that one. I've heard sometimes.
I'm trying to figure that one out. I'm trying to.
Right. Well, as far as the genealogy goes, both genealogies claim to use show that it's Joseph's genealogy, right? And so it goes. One of them goes back all the way back to Adam, like back in the garden. It's Luke's genealogy goes all the way back, and it's crazy just how far back they go cause just to fulfill these prophecies, but they get something wrong. They get so many things wrong. As a matter of fact, in Luke they say that that Jacob, the son of Isaac, the son of Abraham, the son of Terah, blah 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 blah, and then back to the son of Adam. And they completely skip Solomon and David and all these other really, really important biblical figures in the other account. So all these generations, they skip them and they pull some of them out just to equal up to 14 generations to fulfill the prophecy of 14 generations, seven being numerology was big in Judaism at the time. And so seven and seven, you know, seven's a holy number, 14. And so that was another one of the prophecies. So they just pulled out all of these different little branches of the family tree to fulfill this. And even as early as Joseph, you know, they use Joseph genealogy, even though he's not the father, not the sperm donor, so to speak. You know, Jesus is purported to be the son of God. So why they're using Joseph's lineage, I don't know. Just beyond me.
Do you have any like ideas as to how the people, with all the councils and things that we've had with the Bible, when when the books were selected to go in the Bible, or you know when they met again as a Catholic Church to decide what was going to be in, what was going to be out? Do you not why don't they catch these, like, oh, this is a blatant one book says one thing, one book says the other. Why put them both in there? Because that's obviously going to draw attention and make people ask questions.
Right. So the genealogy has actually been disputed from as early as like the fourth or fifth century. Like they were disputing that really early. They were like, hey, why does this say this, and why does this say that, and why does this one say that that Jacob is the father of Joseph, and this one has this other dude listed for the father of Joseph, and this one doesn't have any women in it at all, and this one has women in it, but when you get down, and I go through it in my book, you'll have to pick that up to kind of get the rest of that, but there's a reason that there are women in one genealogy and not the other, and it's all to fulfill the gospels or fulfill the prophecy for either the Gentiles, the Jews, or Romans or whatever.
They're retrofitting, right?
Basically. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Steve, were you getting ready to ask a question there a second ago?
Oh no, I heard we talked to him about this on the other day called adoptionism. Where the literal, I guess, God adopts Jesus, like that becomes like the figurative son of God. Have you ever heard something like that?
Hmm. Well, they're the same person.
The figurative like son of God.
Well, because people say he's the son of God, but there was this thing called adoptionism where he was born of like Mary and Joseph, and then God adopted him and then became a deity.
What? No, no. See, I don't. I know. I don't. I definitely. Don't,
I don't know. How, maybe, don't, maybe I'm off. That no. It's called adoptionism. It's really strange. But so what? What? I mean, if Jesus does exist, what was his lineage?
Well, that's really hard to. I mean, you can go. You can follow the genealogy that's in Genesis, and you can follow it down from Adam, and you can do it from there. But going up. You can only get so far down, and going up from Joseph, as soon as you get to Joseph's dad, like it's fucked up from there on out. And there are no coinciding names from there on out up until you get to the end of the genealogy of Genesis.
This is the thing that bothers me the most about Christianity. And that is this Trinity thing. It makes zero sense in terms when you have, you know, in the verses where it's, you know, either Jesus talking to God or vice versa. And you have people that will try to tell you they're the same person, you know, they're one and the same. And so then you have the questions of, is he sacrificing himself to himself when he's on the cross saying, you know, why have you forsaken me? Did he forsake himself? Like, is he, you know, did he, what, how does that make sense? What's your opinion on that?
I mean, that's also really, really controversial. I mean, you know, you're talking about his last words, you know, before Jesus died in Mark and Matthew. Mark and Matthew are the only two that coincide with each other as far as Jesus' last words. And for the people who claim that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and even John were written by firsthand eyewitnesses, then I don't know how they would get such important details about such an important figure of a belief that they subscribe to so much, almost cult-like. As a matter of fact, it was a cult at the time. It was considered a cult by the Romans. So in Mark and Matthew, before Jesus died, he cries out in anguish. He said, my father, why have you forsaken me, like you said? But in Matthew, the very next book to be written after Mark, Jesus' last words are where Mark ends at Mark 16:8. Oh dang it! I gotta look it up. I'm trying to remember the exact wording of that one.
You don't have the entire Bible memorized, chapter and verse.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
I've got quite a bit of it memorized.
He gave you plenty of time to prepare. You had 24 hours to memorize this.
Right, absolutely.
We used to have to say, I wonder how far I could get in the books. We used to have to say the books of the Bible in Sunday school. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 something.
Chronicles?
Ezra, Nehemiah. Yeah, Chronicles. Ezra, Nehemiah. That's as far as
I'm right there with
That's
you, man. I'm right there with you.
This is still a lot better than I thought.
Oh yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all.
We had to growing up, for around Christmas time. It was around this time, actually. Every year, the kids would have to. They would get a verse. They would go up in front of the church at the Christmas program that they would do. You know, the older kids got to be in a play, but the younger kids, because they couldn't be trusted with the parts. In the play, we'll just get a verse. You just go up there and say, you know, a verse or whatever. And everybody, I was hectic in Sunday school. I used to give the Sunday school teacher so much hell. And everybody would get these short verses, like these just real, real quick one line, one sentence verses. The time that I went there, she gave me Psalms 100, the entire Psalms. 100.
Wow.
Yes, I had to do the entire thing. And so I literally, my mom would make me stay up after doing homework and all that and go over this verse. And I mean, I knocked it out in the park, but I never forgave her for that. And I still to this day do not.
Jeez.
Pat, I don't forgive you, Pat.
Oh man, that's awful. That's awful.
But I digress. Go ahead, Jim.
I wouldn't be able to do that. Oh, I never have those memorized.
Well, I can't remember the verse, but I was reminded of something else that isn't a contradiction that's often purported to be one, and that's the time that Jesus was crucified. Because John says something a little bit different than the synoptic gospels do, than Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all say that it was the ninth hour when Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Or my Father, why have you forsaken me? I think it's Eloi, Eloi, Lama, Sabachthani, or something like that.
Sounds right.
So they're saying that at about the sixth hour, or it's about the ninth hour, Jesus died, which is what is it, like 3 p.m. or something like that? I believe that they started counting hours when the sun rose. So however many hours that was from the time the sun came up, and in John, it says that it was on the third hour, I believe, that he died, and so everybody was like, oh well, you know, this is different, you know. This said he was crucified at this time. This said he was crucified at this time. Like, what's going on here? Like, why is there a difference? But it's because John was written so much later than they were. They had a completely different method of counting time, where he was, and you have to remember, these weren't written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So this wasn't an apostle. You know, this is when these texts are analyzed. John comes from a completely different country, just by the way it's written, by the grammar that it's used, by the syntax, contextual clues, historical evidence, what it's written on even. There's just so much evidence pointing to these gospels. The only accounts of Jesus being the Son of God and a miracle worker and here to die for our sins, and these people who claimed I don't want to say that they claim to be the authors, because they really don't, because Luke, from the very beginning of Luke says that he's just passing on the oral traditions of people before him, but I mean. It's very clear that the way that they're written, even verbatim sometimes, that they're both sourced from the same document. So they're both sourced from the same written document, written at some other point before them. Some people theorize, I'm sure you've heard, Steve, the Q document or the Quill document.
Is that a Mormon thing?
No, no, it's a theory. No, it's a theory that that for whatever doesn't match up with Mark in Matthew and Luke, that whatever that other information is came from this other document, this other Q document. As a matter of fact, most modern day scholars kind of dismiss that, and they just say that they are sourced from other documents, but it's not any one particular document, but rather. Some historical documents, some personal anecdotes. Some even say that John was written by either an apostle or somebody who knew the apostle, and it would have to be somebody who knew the apostle, because it would have been 100 or so years after that the apostle died.
I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say, Steve.
I haven't heard anything. I have no idea what the Q document is. I mean, the only thing that I remember, something like, what is it, GDPMHQ or something, where they had like 4 different authors of Genesis. But yeah, I'm not familiar with.
Yeah. And there's a whole alphabet. There's A and B even. I mean, it's and another thing that points to these. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no! Please.
Oh, okay. I was just gonna say that another thing that points to these documents not being factual, or not being firsthand accounts of apostles walking with Jesus and documenting his words, the words in red that are attributed to Jesus that he said verbatim. These people who followed Jesus around, they spoke Aramaic, and most of them we know, because it says in the Bible, were illiterate. Simon was illiterate. Peter was illiterate. They were fishermen, and these original documents that were later translated into Hebrew and into other languages, they were all originally written in what's called Koine Greek. And Koine Greek is an ancient type of Greek that was only written by like very prestigious people, like very wealthy people. This was not a commoner's language, and much less a fisherman's language. Fishermen at that time, they didn't know how to write their name. You know, they would sign X's, I'm sure, or deltas or whatever. I don't know. But they certainly weren't literate enough to be a scribe or to document their travels with Jesus in any way. So we know for a fact that these are all at least secondhand accounts, if not third, fourth, or fifth, or even if they're accounts at all. Okay, so you know, you've heard the analogy, like a game of telephone. You start off with something, and by the time you get to the end, something completely different, right? So, and the person at the end is like trying to figure out, like, oh man, like what did that guy at the front say? Like, what did he say? Like, you know, trying to figure out what he said. So let's just say that the guy at the front was trying to tell the guy at the back where a jar of cookies is, and if he can figure out where the jar of cookies are at the end of the game of telephone, he gets to go and enjoy the jar of cookies. And so the guy at the front starts off with where the jar of cookies are, and by the time they get around to the guy at the end, he has no idea what in the hell that they're saying, and it's all muddled up and mush, and he's like, what? What's in the flow? It's a what? Where is it? And he's sitting there trying to figure it out. But if the guy at the front started off just saying some bullshit, and he wasn't actually saying where the jar of cookies were, then the guy at the end is wasting his time trying to determine what he said. So if these stories are made up, and you know, with miracles and all this other stuff, and Jesus praying in the garden by himself, yet somehow somebody recorded what he said in the garden while he was praying to himself by himself. It's really convenient. So I guess my point I'm trying to make with that analogy is that if the stuff that the Bible purports to be true, if we can know that these details are off, and that they truly do contradict each other, meaning that they cannot both logically exist simultaneously and both be true, then what's the point in trying to figure out, you know, what the guy at the front said?
It's kind of confusing all around, right? Well, somebody who I have a friend who's an Orthodox Jew. I'm not going to say who he is because he's an Orthodox Jew, and he may not want people to know that, but he's very erudite. And he says the JEPD has to do with the Torah. The Q document is a theoretical document to explain text shared between Matthew, Luke, but not found in Mark. And he also says, just want you to know you were on point about adoptionism. I don't know what the hell I even said about adoptionism, so I don't know how I can be on point, because adoptionism makes no sense to me. But whatever I said, he agrees I was on point with that. So,
also in the live chat, Jim, someone said you'll appreciate this. Someone said that it was Eric Mishima. He said, for some reason, I want Jim and Digital Hammurabi to do something. And they put in parentheses educational together. So I think that's that should be in the future for you guys. It'd be a good collab.
Absolutely,
you and Dr. Josh actually would be a pretty good pair to get together, I think.
Right. Oh, so, I remembered Jesus' last words in Luke, son of a bitch. And this is one of the most common.
That was his worst son of a bitch.
There's some hell. You know, if you're getting crucified, that's probably the best thing to go with. Ah, son
of
a bitch.
I don't blame Jesus at all, man.
You know? Yeah, but you can't exactly slap your thigh, though. You know, you're like,
oh,
son of a bitch.
Too soon. Too soon.
All right, we're getting demonetized for that, I'm sure.
Okay, sorry. Okay, so like I said, in Matthew and Mark, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then cried out in a loud voice, lowered his head, and he gave up the ghost, you know, in Matthew and Mark. Now, in Luke, same thing. Jesus is in anguish. He's crying. He's screaming, just like in Matthew and Mark. And he looks up. He cries out and says, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." And he gave up the ghost. That's what it says in Luke. And gave up the ghost. And
to himself.
And Luke is also the only one who says right after he gave up the ghost. One of the guards who was there, the one who had shoved the spear into his side, said, "Oh," he says, "surely or certainly this was a righteous man." And in John, when Jesus dies, you know, they gave him a sponge full of vinegar, and he just sat there and he took it. He didn't cry out, nothing, and after they gave him the vinegar, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. That's what it says in John. So there was no big shouting or no drama or anything, because in John, the whole time John kind of hints that Jesus knows the whole time what's going to happen to him. So Jesus knows the whole time that he's going to be crucified, that he's going to die for man's sins, that he is the Son of God. So he believes that he was born divine. Luke kind of hints at that saying that he is born the Son of God, whenever the angel's coming in and announcing that she's pregnant. It's like, "Hey, guess what? You feeling sick?" You know, there's a lot, especially within the life of Jesus. You know, the story about Jesus going into the temple and people have coins on the table and they're buying and selling chickens and whatever. And he comes in and starts cracking. Well, it's not like a whip. It's like a cord. I think it's what it says. It's like pieces of rope. He starts beating the crap out of people and flipping tables.
I'm pretty sure it says that he gave someone that stole the Stone Cold Stunner.
Absolutely. Right.
I think.
What was it called?
He gave him a Budweiser can on his forehead.
And then flipped everybody off. He climbed on some ropes and then flipped everybody off.
Okay, I gotta look this shit up. Stone Cold.
Wait. Hey.
Like Steve Austin.
I'm going to replay that later.
Oh, okay. I was like, is this in the Bible? I don't know what the hell it is. I don't know what the hell this is.
Yeah, the Stone Cold Stunner was actually a rite of purification given to all Christians. Some people call it circumcision.
Oh. Well, and then you know that John the Baptist actually chokeslammed Jesus when he baptized him. It wasn't just like little dunk. It was a lift up in the air and then chokeslam into the water. It's just the Bible. That's what it says.
So we know about John ever since before he was born, because it was revealed to John's mom, just like it was to Mary, that she was going to give birth to John, and said that he was going to do great things. He was going to lead, you know, lead this revolution or whatever. And it's a really silly story about his dad saying that he didn't believe it when the angel told him. He's like, "No, I don't believe that, because I haven't fucked her yet." He's like, "There's no way she could be pregnant." And then this angel's like, "Okay, well, since you want to be a smartass, you can't talk now." And so he couldn't talk from the time that it was announced that John the Baptist was going to be born until John the Baptist was born. And then they were going to name him after his dad. But instead, he knew that they were to name him John, and he wrote down, "His name is John," and then boom, just like that, he can talk again. And so very, very prophetical, even, just to show you like how important John the Baptist was to the author of Luke, anyways, because Luke is the only gospel that mentions John the Baptist's early life. While she was still pregnant with John the Baptist, I believe she was like 6 months pregnant with John the Baptist. I apologize for not remembering, but Mary got her revelation in Luke from the angel saying that she was with child. Said, "Behold, the Lord's came in you," and now you're pregnant.
Can we rewrite the Bible like you just spelled it out there with the angels going, yeah, you're just a smart ass bitch, you know, just giving it some new age.
Call it the badass Bible.
That might divert people there. It sounds a lot cooler.
If you enjoy this, you'll enjoy my book. I try not to use any vernacular terminology that layman wouldn't understand, you know, because I'm no scholar. I have no accolades. I didn't go to college. I did, however, study to be a Pentecostal preacher, and in preaching and in building my sermons, I strive to understand God more, because the more that I learned about the Bible, the less I felt like I understood who God was. Like, it felt like the less that I knew about the Bible, the more clear it was to me who God was. Like, oh yeah, God loves me, I believe in Jesus, I'm going to heaven. And then the more I studied about it, I was like, well, fuck, I don't really know if I'm going to heaven. And then after a while, I was like, fuck, I really don't know if there's a God.
So in your book, in that verse where he says, why have you forsaken me? Instead of that, it would be to bump it up to today's terms, it would be, why are you ghosting me? Right.
right.
And you know what? Right. Oddly enough, YOLO wouldn't work for Jesus, because he actually lived twice. Yeah. YOLO wouldn't work for him. So you couldn't use that.
It wouldn't work for like Buddhist either, right? Or Hindu.
It'd be YOLT. You only live twice. YOLT.
Jesus's epitaph would read, "Daddy left me on red."
Oh shit! Shots fired.
For a Hindu, you only live as many times as it takes, right?
At least in Matthew and Mark, because in John, you know, he didn't have shit to say to Dad, and in Luke, he was like, "I'm coming home, Daddy." You know.
Wasn't there in Mark, there was some discrepancies with how it ended. There's some kind of controversy with him, like forging a, what's the deal with that? What's the deal with Mark?
Well, it wasn't that necessarily that he forged it, but yeah, you're right. Mark just kind of ends suddenly. I think it's like in, Mark 13, I think it is, but anyways, yeah, it just ends suddenly when the women go running from the tomb. Oh no, Mark 16:8, when the women go to the tomb and they're scared and they run from the tomb because they're in fear for their lives, and Mark 16 just ends. Like, that's just the end of it. But then it was later filled in to reflect the other gospels by scribes later. I believe that was done in the 13th century by the Jewish scholars by that council. I think that's right.
Mark 16:9 is what the live chat's saying. Mark 16:9. I just wonder. I wonder how people can trust that as a like an actual book, that it was inspired by God, knowing that it was, you know, added to later and then chosen by a group of men, you know, fallible men here on earth that obviously chose, like, if you're going to make a Bible, right, to me anyway, you're going to want to fill it with things that are attractive to people, you know, that make you want to be a part of that religion. And it seems like they chose the worst verses and some of the worst situations and some of the, you know, just examples of things that one verse says this, like my favorite contradiction is in the Noah's Ark, where in one verse it tells you that they went two by two, and then in another verse there's a completely different number of animals, and those are verses away. It's so stupid. It's so dumb.
That's an example of a contradiction that's not actually a contradiction.
What?
Oh, I'm interested.
Is that a contradiction? or not a contradiction?
It's not an actual contradiction. Yes, it does say to bring different numbers of animals on. It says to bring two of every animal, but then it says to bring seven of every clean animal and two of every unclean animal. I believe that's it. And so he brought some on because whenever all the land dried up, he literally sacrificed like half of the freaking animals that were on the ark, and it was like, oh, thank you God for not drowning me, but for drowning everybody else. And then just literally burned half the animals that he just saved, and spent what some scholars believe is like 130 days on the ark, but what I personally believe is up to a year, judging by 40 days and 40 nights of water covering all of the water in the land. That would have to be pretty impressive. Not to mention, you know what? I go into it in my book. We're not talking about the Old Testament, but you'll have to pick up my book.
Yeah. I just brought that up as an example. I didn't mean to take you back to the Old Testament. But just real quick on that point, isn't that, though, even though you might not consider it a contradiction, isn't it two completely separate stories that were edited together? Like the Dr. DeMattei is a – we have him on sometimes. He comes in and does examples of biblical contradictions. And he says that it was two different accounts of the floods narrative that were passed down. And like an anthology, it got – people wanted to keep both of them. They didn't want to get rid of both. It was kind of like,
right,
you know, two different groups of people coming together and forming one religion. And so one group had their version, the other group had their version, and they kind of interwoven the stories and tried to make it fit. What's your thoughts on that?
No, yeah, absolutely. And you see that happening all throughout the Bible. In fact, the whole reason that that Jesus' birthday and Christmas is purported to be December 25th was for the Romans to mesh with the majority of pagan population. The Christian population in Rome in the first century was small, very small compared to pagan. And when I say pagan, I don't mean like they're like they're out like, you know, rubbing naked on trees or lighting incense or dancing under the stars or whatever. But they probably did exactly that, because what I mean by pagan is at the time everything had a god. There could be a god for everything. If somebody found a piece of silver in a cesspool, they'd say, oh, this is some god's work, so I'm going to give this goddess or this god a name. This is going to be the god of this cesspool. We're going to call him Shittius, and he's going to be my god. And so people were making up their own personal gods, and they were sharing them amongst each other. And the most popular ideas that were being shared around kind of became the ones that we all know to be pagans. That's exactly what they did. They said, okay, you guys are celebrating the winter solstice. What if we kind of celebrated this with you, and you know, we can celebrate on December 25th. You guys can party with the Christians. Christians can party with you. And all that was an attempt at conversion, or making conversion a little bit easier of a transition, because the pagans loved getting drunk on their spring and winter solstice. They loved doing whatever they wanted without fear of any supreme deity that has ultimate power over them. Like, sure, some of them didn't want to go in these certain woods because they thought that there was a pine cone fairy that shoved pine cones up your ass if you whistled a certain tune while you walked through. Like, yeah, they wouldn't want to do that or whatever. But oh man.
By the way, just real quick, did you say Oshidius? Was that the name of an example? That was awesome. That was fantastic.
Oh yeah, that's my personal little demon.
The cesspool god. You said partying with Christians.
Right.
Maybe partying
was the wrong word, but so early Christians were nothing like modern day Christians. Like then again, alcohol then was nothing like alcohol now. It was more of just like a fermented grape juice that wasn't really fermented that long, just more like soured, you know. And if you drank enough of it, it'd get you jacked up. So they would mingle with them. They would feast. As a matter of fact, that's where Christians get their idea of a Christmas tree. In fact, in the Bible, it says, you know, they're speaking to the Romans, the current Roman occupants, and they're saying, hey, if you're a real Christian, you're not going to take that tree into your house and nail it and adorn it with silver and gold like the pagans, are you? Because that's not what God wants. And so that's actually where we get the Christmas tree. So I guess that speech to the Romans didn't really take hold. I guess people really like their Christmas trees.
So funny that if people, I think, knew where the origin of some of the things that we practice today occurred, they wouldn't be so keen on, you know. But then again, no, I don't think anybody's going to sacrifice. Well, there might be some crazy people that are.
yeah, don't put it past them.
Yeah. That is true. But I can't imagine someone going, well, this is pagan. No Christmas trees this year. Can't right. do anything that the you know, when it's just a tree with lights on it, like there's nothing inherently you prescribe the evil to it. In itself, it's just a tree with lights on it.
Right. But according to the old law, you know, because you have to remember at this time that even when Jesus was born, people were already adhering to Moses' law. They were already adhering to the Ten Commandments. And one of those Ten Commandments is thou shalt not make before me. Any graven image, and then thou shalt not worship any other gods. So that they idolatry was something very, very frowned upon, and frowned upon is a very very generous term for that. That they killed people for creating these idols. As a matter of fact, when Moses came down in the Old Testament, he saw that they were all worshiping, you know, the golden calf. Man, he was pissed to say the least.
I can imagine. They used to do some, like, speaking of the idols, and there was one story, and I cannot for the life of me remember. I'm sitting here trying to think about it, but there's one story of probably the most gruesome way to execute someone or torture someone, and they would create that golden bull and then put them inside the bull and right. then light a fire up underneath it. I mean,
that was Greek, wasn't it?
Fucked up stuff.
Yeah, the guy that actually created that bull ended up dying in it because he wanted to show how it worked. He got inside and they locked him in and lit it up.
Yeah,
that wasn't the most creepiest. The creepiest death thing that I heard that they would do, they would take somebody and they would basically put honey and cut them, and then they would put them in a ship that was. Had a bowl like this and then a flat top, and there it'd be basically arms out and just basically covered with the ship. So they'd be floating, and basically they'd poke holes in the top of the ship. So you'd be out there and you'd be having all this honey and grime and blood, and you'd have all the insects and gnats, and it would basically eat you alive for a period of a week out at sea.
Oh, you know what's worse? You know what's just as bad as that, Steve? I think it was Romans used to take a bucket and put rats in the bucket and then fasten that to your chest and then light a candle up underneath the bucket. And as it slowly heats up, the rat starts to eat a burrow away out because it's too hot in there. Where do these people come up with this stuff? I mean,
fuck if I know. Creative shit, I'll give them that.
I don't know.
The
Romans, actually, the only records that we have of Roman crucifixion, they never took down people from the crucifixes, and really the crucifixes were more like straight poles. They were more like trees in which their hands were nailed up above their head instead of out to the side as we know the lowercase T to be. But in Roman crucifixion, they would leave the person to die on the cross and not just die, but to be devoured by scavengers, because at that time in early Judaism and in early Christianity and even today still, burial is something that is very it's very
reserved
sacred
for the righteous.
You know, it was a sacred rite for the religious people to be buried, which is why in the Bible that they beg the centurions to let them bury Jesus in the tomb. But I was speaking of the tomb. They can't agree on that either within the Gospels. This is actually one of the most common contradictions, which happens to be an actual contradiction. And it's actually three or four different contradictions because we're talking about three or four different accounts. They can't agree on how many people were there. What they did after they went there, in Mark, the women ran away in fear. But because the angel told them, the stone was rolled away. There was an angel there and the angel said, "Hey, he's not here. Go and spread the good news. Go and tell everybody." And in Mark, it says the women just screamed. They were like, "Ah, fuck this. It's a ghost," or whatever. And then that's just the end of Mark. So we don't know that they went and told who they needed to tell. In another one, the women never saw the angel. They weren't given this command. I believe this is the one where the three Marys walk up and there's a Roman centurion there, a Roman guard standing at the stone. And they say that, they are a loud noise and they look up and there's two angels there's one angel that descended down to the ground and rolled the stone back. And then another angel came down and they walked in. And then it says two walked in and three came out, and three of them came out. It says one of them's head touched the sky and the other one's head like was higher than the sky. And I don't know. It's really, really weird. I don't know if you guys have gotten to read the different accounts, but I highly encourage you to read them.
I got to tell you, I'm realizing more and more as I do this show, we talk about the Bible, that whatever the hell I read growing up isn't what the Bible is anymore. I think it's like the Mandela effect, because I've heard stories and shit that I never heard of before. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, I've read the Bible. I definitely read the New Testament, the whole thing. I'm an Old Testament and parts, you know, most, but not all. Right. Right. Most of us skip most of the parts, but I mean, I
That's
had a general reading of it in Sunday school, but I'm finding out shit in there that I just had no idea. I found out something that was in there, like this, the story of the general that prayed that if he would win and come home safely, that he would sacrifice the first thing he saw when he got home. And it happened to be his daughter, right? I'm sure you remember the whole story name. I had never in my life heard that story before.
Or something like that.
It's because whenever you go to church and they're preaching to you, they're only giving you the Billboard Top 40. I mean, they're just giving you the greatest hits.
It wasn't
hits,
in the
you know?
Bible when I was growing up. No, there was a quantum change.
Thank you, Rose. With the tomb thing and that story, there was also I have a question in regards to an account of something in one book that is a pretty major event that's not mentioned in any of the other ones. And I think that's a striking or a very glaring red flag, I think, because that's the first where the people they rose up out of the ground and greeted each other in the streets. You know, the dead were raised and they went around shaking hands in the street like, "Hey, Tom, it's good to see you. You know, I've been dead for however long." But there's only one book that mentions that. And if that's a huge event, like that's huge. Why is only one account talking about all the people that came up out of the ground and, were saying what's up in the streets?
Well, I mean, a lot of the reasons that they add a lot of these things is to appeal to the people that they're writing to. I mean, a certain one writes them for the Gentiles, for the non-Jews, maybe for the Romans. One of them writes them for the Jews. One of them, and we know this by the way they write. For instance, the one that writes for the Gentiles, they make so many Judaic references, like references to the Judaic faith, to the Torah, and to their traditions and their practices. But not only do they mention them, but then they dumb them down and further explain these traditions and these rituals and these practices of basic Judaism that any Jew would know. So we know that he's not teaching them to Jews, but he's teaching somebody who's not a Jew about what Jews do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Someone brought the example too of don't forget about the bears who eat the children for making fun of a bald guy. That is a hell of a story, by the way.
I didn't know about that story.
But it's not a contradiction.
Nephilim Free. No, it wasn't a contradiction, but I was not aware of that story. Nephilim Free actually taught me that story. Probably the one thing I ever crossed.
It was 42 kids, I believe, called him Baldy. And so he called, he prayed to God, and God called two female bears, two mother bears down on the children, and they devoured all of them, all 42 of them.
Savage as fuck. Savage as fuck.
What was a fat bald man doing in a group of 42 kids?
Yeah, but how petty are you if you're gonna kill 42 children for calling someone bald? Like, that's you want to worship that dude for eternity, really? I mean, you want to worship that guy forever?
I mean, it's probably been going on every day. You know, he's just walking there. He's walking the state, and he sees him in the distance. You know, before they're within earshot, because there's 42 of them, right? So you can see him for a fucking mile away. It's like there's a big swarm of them, and he just sees this zombie horde of taunting children, and all he thinks is, Let that little motherfucker call me Baldy. Let him call me Baldy. He said, God,
today's a motherfucking
God, he calls me Baldy. You know what to do. And then he just walks up and they're like, hey, Baldy. And he was like, get him, God. And all of a sudden these two bears come out and he goes, oh shit, God, that's a little far.
They got their comeuppance, didn't they?
You think they fist bumped? Like the bears, I got you, dog. Got you, dog.
Oh, right.
That's crazy.
I just wonder how the kids are so goddamn slow. You figure the bear's going to be taking out one or two kids. A couple of them going to get away, right? Even motherfuckers start running. But nope. They're all sticking around going, okay, I'll wait to be next.
Jeez.
Yeah, right? Right. I wonder if the bears blessed their food before they ate it, being as they were, that they could communicate with God and all.
You know it. I mean, bears are very respectful. Remember, it's a bear that prevents forest fires in this country. So, I mean, they do have their head on straight.
No, the bear says only you can prevent forest fires.
But
the bear is just a condescending asshole who doesn't want to do any work on his own.
Oh, listen, we just talked about what bears can do to people. All right. You have a nice head of hair. All right. I'd hate to see what a bear can do to that.
So, come on with it, Baldy.
Steve, he just called you Baldy.
Well, I don't have the empowerment to have two female bears come down and eat him, but I actually like the guy, so I mean, I don't want him dead.
Bears today are a different thing now. If I'm not even going to make that joke. Just bears today means something completely different. So
you just did make the joke, Kyle.
I know. Okay, so we've got about 10 minutes left in the hour and a half, and we haven't got to any of your slides. Do you want to show?
I mean, we can throw up whatever. I don't remember what all I sent, but
well, there's the Atheist Republic. Nice logo. All right, Dave, switch to the next one. Let's see what we've got, and then the next one.
Yeah, so this is a map of cross references in the Bible. There are hundreds of thousands of cross references, and each one of those they connect back and forth. Each one of the colors means something else. I can't remember the guy's name who was going to do this. I was going to give him credit for this, but somebody actually spent the time to map this out. This isn't all of them. I found out after I had sent this to you that there's actually a map that's more comprehensive than this one, even that's been done more recently. But that just shows you how many verses in the Bible refer to each other. So they've obviously read each other's work.
That's amazing. So each one of those lines correlates to a time where one verse is referencing the other,
right? Contradictory or not, just as long as they parallel or mention a person or mention an event,
right? So what this means actually is that
the Bible is okay with homosexuality, because that's obviously a rainbow. So that's what we can take away. All of these verses together is God saying that, go ahead, people, be gay. Do your thing. Nice.
I mean, Jesus, maybe he wasn't saying amen. Maybe he was saying, men.
I like that. That's good. What, you know, and that, well, this brings us full circle, because that's a contradiction.
I can't take credit for that. I'm pretty sure I saw the meme somewhere.
this brings us full circle, because that in itself is a contradiction compared to the other verses in the Bible. So that brings the conversation back full circle. He's okay with it, but he has to, you know, he's on the down low about it. Let's put it that way. I think that's the takeaway here.
All right. Well, I mean, then there's a translation thing. He didn't actually say amen, you know. Oh yeah, look at this contradiction right here. This is a pretty much a representation of what the Bible was looking like to me after a while of going through it.
And this would also serve as a representation for Bill Cosby. Is it too soon to make that joke? Is it too soon? Okay. Sorry. All right, Dave. Never too early. Never too early.
Hey, that looks familiar. Oh yeah, this is the title of my book. It's Holy Proofreading: Correcting Christianity. The actual title's on the spine. It's just the cover with the subtitle. It'll be coming out next year, and greatly look forward to seeing what kind of response I have to it. I believe that there's a lot of really good information into it. I'm kind of scatterbrained right now. I don't have the book in front of me or anything. This is all just what I know of what I've researched. But I really truly believe that people would enjoy it. They'd be able to pick it up. Read these contradictions, not just read the contradiction, but read why it's a contradiction, and not have to go anywhere else for any secondary source, not have to go anywhere else but for confirmation. You know, they can go and they can verify any of the claims that I make in this book. I did my very, very best to make sure that this book is not erroneous, that my facts are legitimate. They are backed up by most of them are backed up by the majority consensus of biblical scholars. Now I do make some points in there that I believe are true, and I do give my reasoning for that, and what I believe is very, very good evidence for that being true.
And where can people
do your research? You actually make sure that the facts are correct. You actually do your due diligence, and you actually care about things being correct.
Right. Well, it all started when I was a Christian. Like, I actually wanted to make sure that I was getting the true meaning of the inspired or the divinely inspired word of God. I wanted to make sure that if I was going to be teaching Christ's message to the masses, that I was teaching what he would have me teach. And so I wanted to make sure that I understood this thoroughly. What the Bible was, why it was the way it was, why things like slavery and stuff were real. So I went as far to translate things from the original Koine Greek to studying contextual ancient Greek. And ancient Greek is no joke for anybody out there who has a degree in it. I applaud you. I tip my hat. It is extremely difficult, much harder than any normal Greek. Even some Hebrew, I learned, just so I could, put myself in the shoes of early Christians. And, the more that I did that, the more that I confirmed with myself that early Christians and early Jewish converts to Christianity believed that Jesus was coming back in our time. And not only that, but Jesus lived as a Jew. He was circumcised. God had no problem with Jesus being circumcised. He obeyed Moses' law. He refers to Moses multiple times in the New Testament. He refers to the old law multiple times. The apostles refer to the old law. The Exodus is mentioned verbatim. Isaiah is mentioned verbatim. All of these books that people claim are are no longer sources of any sort of religious legislature or any sort of doctrinal commands. They believe that with the shedding of the blood of Jesus, that all of that is gone and away. And it couldn't be further from the truth. If there was a Jew or a Jewish convert or an early Christian from the first or second century that could time travel back to today and discover that Jesus was not here, I'm pretty sure he would figure out how to use a six hour pretty quick.
Where can people get your book? And I want to agree with what someone said in the audience. The cover kind of gives you that feel of a biblical historian. What 50 Shades of Grey, sort of that vibe it gives off. 50 Shades of Grey for biblical scholars.
I mean, if you've read the Bible, some of it's pretty steamy. But whenever it comes out next year, you'll be able to pick it up on Amazon. You'll be able to pick it up on Kindle, on any ebook. You'll be able to pick it up in most independent bookstores. I have not confirmed with Barnes & Noble yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to get it into Barnes & Noble. But you can definitely get it on Amazon.
I want to sign a copy, please.
Hopefully, when it releases, Steve will invite me back on, and I'll go over another topic a little bit more extensively.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to buy a copy and then send it to you and have you sign it for me.
Fantastic.
All right. Dave, were there any other slides left?
Okay. Yes. I cannot see that.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for you to read because it's we're streamed back at a lower quality, but it looks like there's two tables.
Okay, so I believe this is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John on the left, and this is John on the right, and this is paralleling versus what the synoptic gospels, and synoptic meaning sin, meaning together, or and optic meaning to see. So there, synoptic means to see together. So all of these kind of line up, and then it shows where John differentiates in his portrayal of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. All right, Dave.
That's the last one. Okay,
and so this is the closest thing that I could find that I agreed to as a Venn diagram of sourcing from these books. So it says that 20% of Matthew's material is unique to Matthew. So 20% of what's in Matthew is not anywhere else, but 94% of it's got 94% of Mark in it. It's got 55% of Matthew or Mark and Matthew. It shows you what Mark matches Luke, where Matthew matches Mark, and so on and so forth. So just it's a big circle jerk of information sharing and omitting and editing things that they that's not convenient for them. Kind of like people leaving a church because they don't agree with what the how the preacher is interpreting and portraying the Bible.
Yeah, it's kind of backwards how that works if you think about it, because people are kind of shopping for what, you know, what brand or version of religion feels more comfortable to them. It's, you would think that it would be a thing where this is what it says, this is what you do. But instead, we've created all of these different factions that ease up on one thing, or they're, you know, they're not quite as judgy on this, or, you know, they turn a blind eye to this. And it just, it's all about what makes you feel good, not about what it actually is.
The fact of the matter is out there, and for any theist out there, I challenge you to ask yourself this. Ask yourself, do I disagree with what I believe? And you'll find yourself saying no. Nobody disagrees with anything that they hold to be the truth because they believe that it's the truth. But that does not constitute it being truth, and so you won't find somebody in a quote unquote wrong church for them, you'll think it's a wrong church, but for them, it's the right church because it's convenient for them because they're not stressing out about burning in hell forever or whether or not they're going to get to praise God for eternity.
I went to one of those churches as a Southern Baptist that tell you that I don't know if they still do because I haven't been there in forever, but when I was there, dancing before you were married with someone, it puts you in danger of going to hell. Just dancing. I mean,
you got a savior and, you know, for Jesus.
Right. They can't all be right. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if that's the case, if that's true, then all the other churches that allow that are wrong and all those people are going to hell. Like, how can you be under the same umbrella and call it, you know, they're a Christian, they're a Christian, they're a Christian, when one particular sect of them feels that moving back and forth together while touching is enough to damn you to eternity. That's bizarre. I mean, it's completely bizarre.
It's because they have biblical justification for it. The same reason that Pentecostals have biblical justification for their women not wearing gold jewelry or not cutting their hair or men not wearing sideburns. For a lot of these stupid beliefs, there is justification for it.
And that's my point, though. That's my point. That church will be able to justify it. And then the one down the road that has a dance every Saturday will be able to justify how this church is completely wrong. You can open that book and two people can read the same verse and walk away with two completely different ways to follow it. And to me, if I'm a God and I want people to come to me, I'm going to make it clear. I'm not going to leave it open to interpretation. And it's up to people whether they follow it or not.
Right, and if the will of God is being executed in the editing and the way that the Bible is currently as we know it, then he wouldn't be allowing three or four different accounts of what happened to in arguably the most important 30 years of Christianity.
Isn't there some churches that will, if you're dancing, they'll come up between you and like put in a Bible that way and say leave room for the Holy Ghost?
Or yeah, well,
and I'm not even making this up.
You're not. So when we would be at church, all the young kids would sit together. You know, they were our friends because they were the only other kids that we were allowed to hang out with. You know, we couldn't go hang out with the Baptist or with the little secular skater kids or whatever. We hung out with other Pentecostals. And if we sat next to a female on the pew on the big long bench in the church, they would come up and put a Bible in between you and said, "Save room for Jesus."
And you know what's interesting that you just brought that up about Pentecostals, because another question I had when I was coming out of religion is, why is the Holy Spirit discriminatory? Because he only arrives and gives people the power to talk in tongues at Pentecostal churches. He's scared to death to go into Baptist churches or Methodist churches. You never see him there. He only shows up at Pentecostal churches. And if this was a real thing, do you honestly think that he would not show up at a church that were earnestly, you know, believing in him? It seems like it would be a thing that is uncontrollable, whether you were Baptist, Methodist, Pentecostal, Presbyterian, any of those, that if the Holy Spirit was going to show up at your church, he was just going to show up and you were going to speak in tongues and, you know, go crazy like they did. But no, he only goes to those churches that are okay with it. Now, how convenient is that?
Well, I mean, if you notice, I don't see any atheist or agnostics being possessed by demons. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I don't see any
100%. I get it around me all the time. I mean, I've slept with so many women that I've contacted a demon from every one of them. I think that's how it works. If you watch last night's show, you'd understand. Sexually transmitted demons. You can sleep with somebody and then 11 years later, I guess if the person you slept with dies, their demon is going to detach from them and attach to you.
There's actually a preacher that said last week or the week before last that yoga was a sin because it's based on Hinduism and said that certain positions open up your body to allow demons into your body cavities.
Downward dog. Downward dog is the position. But Steve brings up the point of a group that we were talking about last night. We had Shannon Q on, and we were talking about this national the National Christian Counseling Association and their practices.
Oh, God,
they literally tell people that you can contract diseases and demons and illnesses like being bipolar or Parkinson's from having sex with someone who has that. It will.
Man, I just had a million-dollar idea. I am going to get a whole big freaking industrial sized tub of Vaseline, and I'm going to get a few gallons of holy water, and I'm going to make my own holy lube, and I'm going to sell it to these gullible idiots.
Well, if you need someone to help you test that out, I'm free on the weekends.
just the weekends?
No, for you any day. Just let me know.
Not creepy at all. Well, you know what you should do for Nintendo next time you write a book or something like that, or maybe just as a side project? What Kyle said, you know, about how each church says, okay, if you do this, you're going to hell, right? If you wear yoga pants, you're going to hell. If you dance, you're going to hell. And come up with a list of all the different churches that have something that some other church says is going to go to hell. And I guarantee you, not a single goddamn church out there is going to be exempt.
That is not a bad idea.
Because if that's the case, like one if person I was... gets to heaven, the why is there such a big thing about religion if only one or two people out of the history of mankind are somehow going to make it? Because if all these different religions are screwed because all of them have something that somebody else finds is a salvational issue, all of them, then who the hell makes it? Then why bother for anything? I don't even understand the point for anything.
Right. Well, I mean, it really depends on which prophecy you subscribe to, which fulfillment of the prophecy you subscribe to. I mean, for the Jews, you know, we get the first five books of the Old Testament from the Torah. Like the first five books of the Old Testament, for those who don't know, is literally the Torah. And for the Jews, the prophecies that are there have not yet been fulfilled because they don't believe that that Jesus as described matches the messianic prophecies of the coming king, the anointed one that they say. But the anointed one in Judaism was whenever a king finished his reign, like whenever he died, they would anoint him with oil to keep him from stinking up the place. So they were basically saying that Jesus was going to have a kingdom on earth.
I have bad news, Jim.
What's that?
Really bad news. Dave?
Oh, no.
I'd rather show you just because it's kind of devastating.
Oh, no. Is it my closet?
No, thankfully we don't have those pictures. Dave, do you have it ready or do you need a second?
I need a second. Give me a second.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just a hint. Someone has already beat you to the idea of your holy lube, and we're going to show you that.
No.
Yeah, we're going to show you that.
I told you it's already something already out there.
Yep. It's called Holy Water Lube, and it's got
son of a bitch.
It's got Jesus. Okay. All right. It's got Jesus on a cross, and the bottom of the cross progresses into a dildo.
The fuck out.
No,
I'm seriously going incognito mode. I'm looking this up. I'm just, divine inventions. Holy shit.
There you go.
You ain't lying. Wait, don't tell them the price. How much do you think one of these cost?
Look at that. Sanctus Orgasmus. Sanctus Orgasmus.
It's a regular price. It's not exuberant, but what do you think one of these things cost?
$19.99.
Cheaper than that.
$15?
$12.99.
How much?
And it says $12.99, and it says, I love this, warding off dryness since 159 BC. Jesus wept, but you don't have to.
Oh, my God.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Is it going to be more?
There we go. I don't know what happened.
It says, don't spend 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. Bless your sweet poontang and dip that ass in the water of life. Baptize that John and make it an upright Christian. Hide the pulpit with the speed of Olympic luge. Don't just give in to temptation. Slide into it and out of it and into it.
Man,
that's pretty fucking real, man.
they missed something crucial. They missed something fucking crucial, and they messed up leaving it out. They said they should have started off with "Got a Burning Bush."
what bothers me is there's only one review of this. There's only one review. Man.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Well, you know what they say about Moses' staff.
Oh, shit.
Smite this rock. Wasn't the whole thing he was trying to smite his staff against the rock to make it wet? I mean, boom. There's your story right there.
That's why he was denied entrance.
That's a good note to end on, I think. someone said, like I said, even I love this. Even the gay is embarrassed. Is that what I am? The gay? Even the gay is embarrassed.
Wait. Is that a proper noun? Is like G with a capital G?
I'm gay? I'm not sure.
That could be a good title for your priesthood, the gay.
Could be.
The gayety.
I don't know, the jackass.
The great gayety. The great gayety on earth.
I'm the amazing
the gay,
atheist.
The gay, the gray, and the anxious.
That actually sums up
the
Steve.
The gray, and Dave. I like that.
Perfectly.
I'm just glad that we all know who each other are in that.
I definitely get anxious, so yeah.
The anxious. There, yeah, it works.
I'm
going to
go.
On a rip today, aren't you, man?
The amazing
This is 24/7. You guys will love my book. If you love my my demeanor, you'll absolutely love the book.
Well, when it comes out, make sure that we'll definitely have you back on. But send me a let us know when it's getting ready to be on sale, and we'll put it on our website and all that stuff, and get it out there.
Absolutely, I appreciate that.
Do you have any last minute thoughts that you want to leave everybody with to maybe steer people towards your Atheist Republic and Shiel and Plug and all that stuff?
Right, sure, yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining the discussion today. I really appreciate it. I apologize for being a little bit scatterbrained, but there's a lot of good information here. A lot of it's verifiable. But don't believe me. Don't believe me in anything I say. Don't believe me in what I write in my book. Look for yourself. You want to learn something, you have to read it for yourself. If you're an atheist or an agnostic and you're looking for a community, you're looking for like-minded people in which you can meet up with in your local area, like I said before, Atheist Republic has consulates in your area. We have them all over the world, at least one in every state. So check us out on Facebook. And thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it.
You know, with those holes in his hands, that holy lube could kind of that could work wonders for Jesus, I think. Okay. I was told to let you know that they want to make sure that you made this relatable and that they thoroughly enjoyed this and they want to see you back. So that's the
that's
overall
great.
Sentiment.
I appreciate it. I would love to be back.
Also, not using thank you, Reverend. Well. Reverend Tacos. Thank you, Reverend Tacos.
Oh,
okay. Nice. Steve?
Okay, so let's get some super chats out of the way. see here. You did read the ones from yesterday, right?
I did.
You finish those? Okay. Okay, so Aaron Young, $20. Thank you, Aaron. Or Aaron. He says, amen. Amen to you too. Echidna 5, $5. Blessed, what do you want? What do you want to say? Blessed be with you.
Oh, I just said peace be with you.
Oh, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum. Alaikum assalam.
There you go.
Kitty $5. Anyone ever noticed that Moses is rarely mentioned by the major prophets? He's also not mentioned but once in the Haggadah. Haggadah. How do you pronounce that?
Muslim thing? No, that's incorrect. Jesus actually refers to him a lot. As a matter of fact, Moses appears with Jesus at one point. They've actually appeared together. According to the Bible, Jesus did know who Moses was. He did refer to him quite a bit and even referred to the Old Testament.
Well, he's a super chatter, so he cannot be wrong. He's not wrong.
You're right. That was right.
Spot on right. Groupthink, baby. Sir. You are so right, Echidna.
my voice, they're asking why no Rael. My voice is kind of cracking today, so I'm just taking a day off. Tomorrow I'll resume the Rael voice, but y'all made me paranoid.
I was enjoying that yesterday.
Well, they made me paranoid when they said that my voice would get stuck like that, because if I have to walk around sounding like Lord Rael for the rest of my days, I'll cry. Like, I literally won't talk. I'll become a mime.
But your voice sounds just like.
I was thinking that you should do the video trailer guy. You know, in a world where atheists and Christians meet.
In a world where holy lube is passed out like muffins. I don't know. Why would I say muffins?
We're at nursing homes.
I need to shut up. Why? That makes no sense.
Muffins.
You have to let Red's rhetoric do that voice. You can't do that voice.
That's Red can do that voice pretty well.
I'm embarrassed now. My face is turning red. Why did I say passed out like muffins? Things are not passed out like muffins. That literally makes no sense. Why did I just do that?
There's this little short joke I'm reminded of. There's two muffins in an oven, and they're existential, and one realizes it's alive, and it says, oh my gosh, we're burning. And the other one turns to the other one and says, oh shit, another talking muffin.
I've seen that. That's a shirt, too. I've seen that shirt. Yeah. That's funny. Okay, guys.
I think Kyle's having a phase there where just he's throwing out random words that he thinks mean one thing, but they're just not.
Maybe, yeah. Probably subconsciously, muffin stands for something that I'm regressing and pushing back in the back of my mind. I'm gonna take a step back, and I'm gonna take a step back and try to find out what muffins meant. Enkidu 5 says that he was talking
muffins,
about
the suppress
Testament,
your muffins.
By the way, Enkidu 5 says he was muffins. Talking about the Old Testament, not the New Testament, in that last super chat.
I'm sorry. Oh, talking about the prophets in the Old Testament didn't mention Moses?
Yeah, he's talking about the Old Testament, not the New Testament.
Right. But that's not what Christians base their beliefs off of either.
Okay.
But then again, most scholars today believe that Moses didn't exist historically at all. And in fact, Moses even writes about his own dying. He self-narrates his own death. So we know that those writings aren't written by Moses, but they are attributed to him.
I'm going to do that too, actually. And the way that I want to be sent off is I want to be put in a cannon and shot in the ground. Like that's how I want to. That's how I want my funeral to go.
Just that's hardcore.
Shoot me in the ground in a cannon. Glitch just came in and said, Jim, what contradiction in the Bible do you love?
All of them. I love the contradictions that are verifiable contradictions that aren't petty, that aren't quick gotcha or ahas. I really enjoy the contradictions that not because I win the argument, but because it forces the people who hold those beliefs to be true and always have. It causes them to if not question the beliefs, at least it plants a seed.
And you know how we all love planting seeds around here. Okay, that's a perfect note to end on. remember, guys, you can stick around. Premiering right after we close off the show, you can watch my debate with G-Man if you're interested in that. That will be premiering as soon as we close out of here, and then we will see you back here tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern for what I think is just going to be a glorious dumpster fire. I can't wait to see. These two go at it. These two titans of gaming going at it. So, Steve, any last words?
It's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know what we're in for tomorrow. It's going to be a hell of a ride, whatever it is. I think there's going to be tears. I just don't know from whom tomorrow.
Us, probably. Yep. Jim, Jim, leave us, close us out with a nugget of wisdom. What's your favorite quote that you live by?
Oh man, you're gonna put me on the spot like that.
Yes.
Man,
it's better than him.
I don't know. I guess I'm gonna have to give you a quote from the Bible. I guess it had to be from the book of Ezekiel. It says that she lusted after men whose members were as large as donkeys and had emissions like a horse.
That's actually scripture. That one I didn't know.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Non sequitur. Your facts are uncoordinated.